Chapter 4. After dinner, I borrow Mom's car to drive the twins home. I'm planning to stay the night at Auntie's, like I do every few weeks. Even with Pauline and Perry acting up in the back seat, the ferry ride to Sugar Island is like a 5-minute meditation. I wonder if it was the same when my ancestors crossed the choppy water in birch bark canoes, if their hearts lightened because they were coming home. I glance over to the car next to me and spot Sini Nimki. I quickly look away and hunch down in my seat. Sini recently turned 60, officially making her an elder. She's a mentor to Auntie and works for the tribe's traditional medicine program. She once yelled at our tribal youth council for sitting down at a community event while there were elders standing. Even when I scrambled to my feet, she eyeballed me the entire time. I cried in the bathroom afterward and have been treading carefully around her ever since. Two dogs, Elvis and Patsy, bark at Mom's car as I pull up Auntie and Art's winding driveway, which opens to a chalet-style log home, overlooking Canada to the north. The front yard is bookended with a pole barn garage and an elaborate treehouse. As soon as I park, the twins tumble out of the car and pull me toward the treehouse. Their favorite game is Castle, where we fight imaginary dragons and trolls down the entire length of the tree fort. My battle cry is always, "We don't need no stinky prince!" Perry's a believer, but Pauline takes some convincing. When Auntie comes home, I help with the girls' bath time and story time. After we put the girls to bed, I help my aunt fold laundry at the Granite Island in the kitchen.
"So, you excited about Lake State?" Auntie asks.
"Yeah. Lily and I registered for classes, but my schedule's totally screwed up," I whine. 11 credit hours isn't full-time. What if I can't get into that one biology seminar?"
"You worry too easily about shit. Lake State's not going to screw you over. Your last name is on a dorm, for crying out loud."
I fall silent and focus on carefully folding one of Perry's t-shirts. After a minute, Auntie gets up and fixes a cup of lavender tea for me. She sets down the mug and smooths my hair. Sometimes, when I'm around my firekeeper relatives, my older cousin Monk will call me Wabishki Ma Nish Tanish when Auntie is out of earshot. If she ever heard him call me White Sheep, even when he's Giwashkawebi, he'd be leaving the party with two black eyes. But every once in a while, Auntie herself makes a comment with an edge in her tone that sinks into the pit of my Fontaine stomach. Art comes in from his garage workshop and greets me with a bear hug, breaking the awkward silence in the room. Even if I hadn't known where he'd been, the smell of orange hand cleanser, burning sage, and WD-40 would have been a dead giveaway. When Art kisses Auntie, she relaxes into a softer version of Teddy Firekeeper. With me and the twins, her love has layers, a tender core wrapped in an exoskeleton of tough love. But when she's wrapped in her husband's dark amber-brown arms, Auntie can drop her guard. My phone buzzes in my back pocket. I expect to see Levi's number because ever since he got a Nokia with a full keyboard, my brother is more likely to text than call. But the text is from an unfamiliar number.
"It's Jamie Johnson. Levi invited me to your party. I asked for your number to make sure you won't throw out the new guy. All cool?" My first thought is, "Jamie texted me?" My second is, "What the hell is Levi up to?" And my last is, "Who else has he invited?"
The party Levi apparently told Jamie all about isn't exactly supposed to be a party. Lily and I sometimes sleep over at my grandparents' house and help ourselves to the liquor cabinet and wine cellar. We're supposed to make sure everything is fine at the big house since no one is living there. Mom won't consider selling it because she thinks Grand Mary will want to move back home when she's recovered. I can't bring myself to say anything to her about that yet. Lily had the idea we should invite a few friends and celebrate my decision to go to Lake State. Asking Levi to help us get beer was probably not my smartest decision. Art chuckles. "That's one conflicted reaction to a text." They're both watching me. I stuff my phone into my pocket, feeling my face heat up. "Probably the new soup I met today," Auntie says with a smirk. "Cherokee. His name's Jamie. I'm nosy about his scar." Auntie describes it to Art, ending with, "That cut's too straight to be accidental." "His uncle is taking Uncle David's job at Suhai." My voice catches.
Life moves forward, Donis, Auntie says gently. But it's so unfair, I say. I frown to keep from crying as Art gives me another bear hug. I don't remember fairness being one of the 7 grandfathers, Auntie says. The 7 grandfathers are teachings about living the Anishinaabe Minobama Dziwin. Our good way of life, through love, humility, respect, honesty, bravery, wisdom, and truth. I include one in my prayers each morning to help me become a strong Nishkwe like my aunt. I get her point. Auntie's right, as usual. Maybe my mother isn't the only one having difficulty moving forward from unfair events. We hang out until Auntie and Art say goodnight and head upstairs holding hands. I begin to get ready for bed, but before I plug my phone into the charger, I reread Jamie's text. I think back to today on the ice, when I first met him. Before he even opened his mouth, I'd already heard his name plenty of times from Levi, always with an awed tone. According to Levi, Jamie showed up at the open camp right before the team was announced. The superiors had already hosted their pre-draft camp, goalie camp, and invitation-only camp. For a nobody to make the team as a walk-on from open camp, he had to be fantastic. I review what little I know about Jamie, gathered from rumors and our brief conversation. First, I remind myself firmly he has a girlfriend. He also has an interesting scar on his face. He used to be a figure skater. He's Cherokee, but isn't connected to his tribal community. I wonder if it was hard to move around all the time. I wouldn't know. I've lived in the Sioux since I was 3 months old and have always been surrounded by family. The Firekeepers are one of the oldest families on Sugar Island. In addition to the dorm on the hill with my grandfather's name, there are streets in town named after Grand Mary's people. They were some of the first French fur traders who showed up centuries ago along with the Catholic missionaries. I'm definitely local. Yet, even with such deep roots, I don't always feel like I belong. Each time my Fontaine grandparents or their friends have seen my Ojibwe side as a flaw or a burden to overcome. And the less frequent but more heartbreaking instances when my Firekeeper family sees me as a Fontaine first and one of them second. When they say things about the Zuganash and then, a beat later, remember that I'm in the room too. It's hard to explain what it's like being so connected to everyone and everything here, yet feeling that no one ever sees the whole me. Is that how Jamie feels whenever he moves to a new place? Unseen? I sigh and reply to his text. All cool. See you tomorrow. I get cozy on the oversized sofa in the great room, with stars filling 2 stories of windows. Normally, I drift off quickly when I'm on Sugar Island. Tonight, however, curious thoughts about Jamie Johnson seesaw with concern for Travis and how his decline is affecting my best friend. Plus, Levi's actions, inviting Jamie and sharing my cell phone number, seems suspicious. My brother always has an agenda. Auntie's footsteps on the stairs wake me. It's still dark, with even more stars than before. I'm instantly alert at the sound of her voice, low and harsh, whispering through gritted teeth. Where? Tell her not to go anywhere. Yes, I'm on my way. No, you keep her away. Because it's a blanket party, not a murder scene. Damn it, I'm on my way. I bolt upright, but Auntie just shoots me a warning look and keeps walking past the sofa. I quickly get up and follow her into the mudroom, my heart beginning to pound. A blanket party is when a guy does something bad to a woman and her female cousins take him into the woods, rolled in a blanket, and beat the mullen out of him. I ask Auntie when I first heard about it. She called it Nishkwe justice. Lily and I made a pact that if either of us finally got to attend one, we'd tell the other about it. Take me with you, I plead as she rummages for her keys. Lily is usually the one who tells me about Rez happenings. This would be a chance for me to have something exciting to share with her for once. Auntie's my only entry to Ojibwe ceremonies, and sometimes she brings me to full moon ceremonies, but going with her to a blanket party would mean something different. It would be another way for the other Nishkwag in my community to see me as a part of the Firekeeper family, not just a Fontaine. Plus, what if this blanket party got out of hand and Auntie needed my help? No way, she tucks her cell phone into her bra. But I want to go. I'm surprised at myself. I have never talked back to Auntie.
Her word is law. She whirls around and steps toward me, but I stand firm. Auntie glowers. Something shifts in her, energy imploding to simultaneously magnify and focus her anger. The hair on my arms and neck stands on end. This shit is ugly and messed up, and I don't want you anywhere near it. She practically spits in my face. Go to college, snag Jamie, live your nice life. She turns and is gone. I stand there in the dark, hands trembling. Her dismissal stings like a slap across my face. My cousins always tell stories about my aunt's fighting days. Tales of fierce Teddy and her legendary shenanigans that grow more hilarious with each retelling. Like the time when she was at a bar with friends and a Zaganash guy kept asking each girl if she was an Indian and how much Indian was she. He leered at Auntie and asked if she'd show him which body parts were Indian. She throat punched him. While he was gulping for air, my aunt told him he just experienced a real Indian fist, and she had another if he wanted to see that one too. Tonight is the first time I glimpsed the scary version of Auntie. There is nothing funny about it.